Chapter 7 of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. You've pulled through 2 more years on your little homestead, and the deeds are in sight. The Crownlands Ranger has been along taking stock of your improvements and giving you advice on the making of farms and farmers. The knowledge he reveals will be wonderful, equalled only by the super-knowledge of the Intelligence Bureau man. He'll stay the night with you, too, and eat you out of bread, and sleep as sound as Bunyan's pilgrim in your bed, while you toss about on a shakedown in your living-room. But you battle on, following the plough and the sun from day to day, tailing the dairy herd, and trotting along to and from the factory. And though you've seen the main creek desolate of water, and your hay withered, and the grass eaten out, and very little green anywhere about, and heard the chums in the migrant colony over on the plain murmuring like a remnant of Philistines despairing, you're still smiling. You're still a bachelor, too, doing your own laundry and chambermaiding and cooking, putting junks of salt beef on to boil before going to bed, and making dampers whenever you have unexpected guests to your table, or the township baker runs out of dough, or forgets to leave your loaf on the gatepost. Your methods of housekeeping, too, haven't improved like your dairy herd or your ideas of gathering corn and reaping ears. Still, you're getting on. You're called a landholder now, which carries weight, and you're among those who have a stake in the country and are its backbone. You're invited to join in movements afoot for the good of the district. Agents for separators, and harvesters and headers, and milking machines, and sewing machines, and insurances, all put you on their visiting list, and the local MLA, as well as his numerous rivals, call to see you, and blather inspiration about taxation, and a railway past the Green Grey Homestead, and a station at your gate. Even your old cowyard hat, with all its air holes, will be a lot too small for you, you're feeling so important. You're asked to attend progress meetings, too, to get the telephone extended from the township to Smith, and a post-office opened there. Smith is the latest name given your area by someone in authority down in the city. It is given to perpetuate to posterity a notable who crammed a lot into a short, busy life before being called to account. You're asked to sign petitions, too, praying the Shire Council to put a culvert over Dog's Gully, and to deal with the diseased quadruped that is playing dog in the manger at the creek crossing. And when you've put your quavering signature to them, below old Silas King's and Tim Ryan's, and crossed the H instead of the T, and placed a pool of ink over the I instead of a dot, you'll thrill with the brief authority of a ratepayer. Because you think a lot, and say little, and look as if the spirit of the dove has descended on you, you'll be reckoned a brainy chap, a man with a wealth of knowledge hidden in him. So one day when the Lukins and Miskins and Abrahams and others, who for years have been sending their kids per horse and per milk-cart and German wagon to school at the township, decide to fight for their rights and apply for a school all to themselves at Smith, you'll bolt your supper and go along to a meeting of parents. It will be a historic meeting. At first you'll feel doubtful about going, thinking you might be out of order, being a bachelor. But Murphy, in whose house the meeting will be held, will rule you well in order.
"Gone with you," he'll pipe. "What difference do it make, man, if you haven't dearer chiseler? It doesn't say you won't have by the time the school is builded. I own have stopped going for long enough, place God, and it isn't looking as if there was going to be any more in their place."
Mrs. Murphy, who is wearing long earrings and has a shawl about her shoulders, and is seated in a corner of the room sewing and listening, will interrupt him.
"No, indeed it isn't, thanks to goodness, and you needn't be sorry about it either."
And after a big laugh he'll go on,
"Well, there's Abrahams and Lukin and Miskin there. Though they can pull a fair lot between them, they can't make up what's required by the department before the school can be builded. So Murphy here is going to put down his monogram for a couple more anyway, and Dick Gall can surely do the same."
"Just listen to the talk of him," Mrs. Murphy will break in again. "Why, 'tis conspiracy you're after, Pat."
"Who the devil's to know if it is?" Murphy will retort. "And a school at Smith, Wallaby Valley is the right name, will send up the value of Dick Gow's homestead. Anyone can tell him that."
So you'll accept the situation by merely remarking, "I don't mind. If you're satisfied, I am," and add a couple of offspring to the list of eligibles.
"And what's better still," Murphy will determine with shining face, "just hand over that writing pin to him, Abrams, and we'll appoint Dick Gell secretary to the movement, for no man is abler than him to do it. And I'm not joking about it, neither."
And why should anyone be joking? Mrs. Murphy will pause to bite off another thread. "For doesn't us all know he can do it better than anyone without such a cradle of talk, Pat?"
And so, blushing and grinning, you will adjust the pen to your hard, stiff fingers and record the names of those present, and that Mr. Pat Murphy was voted to the chair. Then, after a mixed argument about a chairman's casting vote, and a bet between Miskin and Murphy as to when the school at the township was first opened, you'll put down, "It was moved by Mr. Miskin, and seconded by Mr. Abrams, that in the opinion of this meeting of parents, the time has come for the department to build a school at Smith, late Wallaby Valley, and that the secretary writes, giving the number of children. Carried unanimously."
"And put this to it," the chairman will modestly direct. "Mr. Pat Murphy, the oldest resident in the district, who was in the chair, offered to give for nothing an acre of his land to build the school, providing, and don't leave it out, providing that he don't have to pay for the surveying."
"In his usual generous-hearted style, why don't you put," from Mrs. Murphy. Then the meeting will close with thanks to the chairman, and when you've gathered up the minutes and are looking round to see where you left your hat, Murphy, who is very proud of himself at the moment, will ask,
"What's your hurry? Sure there's lots of time, man. You've no old woman waiting to see how you get to bed."
And Mrs. Murphy, gnawing at the cotton thread again, will chuckle,
"Sure, when you've given him a couple of children, why can't you be decent and let him have a wife?"
While the room is ringing with mirth, you'll feel the blood tingling through your spine, and gathering in your cheeks, and a suspicion that you're being made a joke of will haunt you and start you wishing you had stayed at home and gone to bed. But Wally Lukin, who was dumb all through the meeting, will wake up and come to your rescue.
"You didn't put in it," he'll remark, "how far the youngsters have to go to school from here, I don't think, did you?"
"We didn't then, Wally," Murphy will approve, "nor how many there are either, and 'tis important, 'tis very important. So let us take the number of them. See, there's your own. How many is there of them?"
"Six of the young Lukins," from Mrs. Murphy, as she tosses her sewing about.
"Six Lukins. Put it down, Mr. Secretary."
"And nine of the Miskins," comfortably from Mrs. Murphy.
"Oh, good Lord!"
And Murphy will stare incredulously at Miskin before bursting into laughter.
"And seven Abrahams," from Mrs. Murphy, above the noise.
"Seven for you?"
And shifting his amused gaze to Abrahams, Murphy will break into fresh mirth, and wiping the tears from his eyes with his knuckles, will conclude,
"It isn't a school you fellows want, it's a reformatory."
"For themselves, Pat, or for the children?"
Mrs. Murphy will ask, as she takes out some stitches. And as the mirth sinks again, Murphy will continue,
"Well, now, that's how many altogether, Dick?"
You'll tell him, 22.
"And yours, and my own, another 4. But we better make it half a dozen between us, 3 each. What do you think, Dick?"
And while you're thinking and grinning, Mrs. Murphy will suggest, "And as you men have children so easily, put them down triplets." There will come another outburst, and then the chairman will mention distances.
8 miles and a half mine has to go," Abrams will testify meekly. "That's as good as 9. Put down 9 miles for them," the chairman will direct. "And they goes over a mountain, too, don't they, Abrams? And through a scrub hanging alive with snakes and death adders, and running wild with dingoes."
Abrams will hesitate, and Mrs. Murphy, surveying a half-finished garment, will add, "And with lions and tigers and leopards." "Put down about the snakes and adders and dingoes," the chairman, ignoring Mrs. Murphy, will instruct. Then Miskin, who has been to factory meetings, will raise a point. "Oughtn't it to be an emotion, Mr. Chairman?"
"It can be put in a motion if you like, or an amendment. It doesn't matter a gradle which..."
"If it's to go in a letter, what in the name of God do you want it in a motion or amendment for?" Mrs. Murphy, tiring of stitching, will ask spiritedly.
"Order, will you, over there? Mr. Miskin have the floor."
"Well, I declare." And Mrs. Murphy, smiling to herself, will renew the sewing. But Miskin won't move any motion, so he'll complete the minutes, and the chairman will close the business again, with the hope that if they get a male teacher, it'll be one with wit and breeding.
"You old fool, Pat," Mrs. Murphy will intrude once more. "A schoolmaster with wit and breeding would be kept for the zoo."
With a broad grin you'll find your hat, and when you've said, "Good night, everyone," Murphy will accompany you out to your horse. He'll walk silently beside you, as if there's something on his mind, and when you throw the reins over the horse's head, he'll take hold of the bridle bit.
"I suppose that'll be all right, Dick," he'll question, looking up at you. "Putting the names of children down to ourselves?"
Cripes! You'll suddenly feel it's all wrong. Your blood'll kind of freeze, and you'll stare between your horse's ears and drag hairs from his mane.
"And one other thing, Dick," Murphy'll whisper, in a way that will make the night seem more haunted than the mopokes behind the sheds. "Doesn't you think for a small school like it will be that Julia, my daughter, would suit well to teach the chiseller? Only asking your opinion, you understand."
"You haven't any opinion that matters much about Julia, but under the light of the blazing stars and a sinking moon, you'll go home brooding over the youngsters you have parented, and wondering how you can get rid of that secretaryship." End of chapter 7.